So we'll start by saying Shavua Tov and Slichos Tov. Okay. So we're on Lamed Gimel Amud Beis. I think we'll have to maybe backtrack a little bit. See how far back we want to go, just to review. Okay. I think I made a note of where we stopped. Does anybody remember? So we'll go back to Lamed Gimel Amud Aleph. Yes. So let's start again. It can't hurt. Boy, Rabbi Yirmiyah, which is about 10 lines down from the top. So you remember we had a possibility of being machshir, a posel or a hadas, in the case of Niktam Rosho, if the head was covered by a tmara. And the Gemara that now thinks that that whole issue about taking a posel or hadas and being machshir really is contingent on the sugya of yesh dichui etzol mitzvahs or ein dichui etzol mitzvahs. And Gemara thinks that Rabbi Yirmiyah should have realized that this suffek in the case of Niktam Rosho. So again, going into Yontif, the hadas was posel, and then it became kosher over Yontif, because overnight on Yontif night it grew a tamra, it grew a little berry on top of the head. And Gemara thinks that Rabbi Yirmiyah missed the beat over here, because it's a Mishnah in Masechta Chulin. The Mishnah of Kisi Adam says that if the Ruach covers the Dam, and then the Ruach does the opposite, and it exposes the Dam again, then he's chayiv in the mitzvah of Kisui. And the question is, why not apply the principle of Yesh Dichui Eitzel Mitzvos? Because the very moment that the Dam was covered, it was no longer suitable for the mitzvah of Kisi Adam. And if you apply the principle of dichui, then even if you remove the sibas hapsul, i.e. if you remove the fact that the dam is covered by re-exposing the dam, it should still remain mufka, excluded from the mitzvah. And in fact, Rav Papa himself seems to have derived from this very Mishnah in Chulin the principle that ein dichui etzel mitzvah, so that even though it was rejected, it comes back, and it again becomes an activated mitzvah. And the Gemara answers that Rav Papa himself was vacillating back and forth. He himself didn't really come to any conclusion, nor did he believe that the Tana, the Mishnah, and Chulin come to any definite conclusion. And the issue of Yesh Dichui Etzel Mitzvos or Ein Dichui Etzel Mitzvos remains an outstanding issue, a safek. And here we apply the principle of L'chumra Amrinon, L'kula Lo Amrinon. So it means the following. In the case of Kisi Adam, we're going to go L'chumra because it's possible that Ein Dichui Etzel Mitzvos. And if Ein Dichui Etzel Mitzvos, then he's chayiv in the mitzvah of Kisi Adam. And then we're going to be machmir. In the case of using a hadas that might be possible because Yesh Dichui Etzel Mitzvos, but it might be kosher because Ein Dichui Etzel Mitzvos, we're going to recommend that he doesn't use this hadas because it's Sofik L'chumra. And that leads us to the Gemara of Lema Ketanoi. This is, I think, where we were up to last time, right after the Teku. And if you have Daf Lamed Gimel Amud Aleph, it's poshut midway through the Daf. The first word in the line is Savrua. Just one second. No, I'm sorry. The first word in the line is Amrinon, and it says Amrinon Teku. And then it says Lema Ketanoi. And here's where we gave a long introduction, Mirtz Hashem, to the sugya of Tasa v'lom and Asi. I see that it still remains on the whiteboard here. And we know that in the case of sukkah, if you had schach posel over your sukkah, and then the schach became kosher, for example, he cut down the chibur, so it's no longer mechubur l'karka, in such a case, that's not good enough. He's got to start from the beginning. Because the Torah says tasa l'cha by sukkos and tasa v'lo mina asui. In the case of asui, it means it's automatically kosher, but he didn't actually create it. There was no tasa here, because the tasa, when he put the schach on, was bipsul. So that's what the Gemara is going to ask about the following question. We have in the Mishnah a psul in Hadas, which is called anovav merubim me'olav. If there are more berries on the Hadas than there are leaves, then the Hadas is posul. Now he's allowed to remove the berries in order to kosher up the Hadas, but he's got to do that before Yontif. And the reason for that is because of something called tikkun mana. Do you remember, Rav Osei, we discussed tikkun mana?
Yes.
That one of the violations of Yontif and Shavuos is makah bepatish, and if you set up something that's not roy and you fix it up, that's a violation of tikkun mana, which is a subcategory, a tolda of makah bepatish. Again, there's a gigantic machlokas here about whether this is doraisa or not doraisa, but be that as it may, if he went ahead on Yontif without any permission to do so, and he removed the berries, what's the status of the Hadas? And here's where the Gemara quotes a machlokes between Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Tzadik, and the Chachamim, as recorded in the Brice. Avar v'liktam, which means on Yontif he removed the berries, pasul divrei Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Tzadik. So Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Tzadik says that for some reason, we have to figure out why, because again, it has nothing to do, as I mentioned last time, it has nothing to do with mitzvah bo b'avera. That doesn't apply in this case. But rather for a different reason, which is either because ho'el v'nidche, which means yesh dichre etzel mitzvahs, or because of tasa v'lo mina osui, if we assume you need agad. So that's what we're going to discuss in a few minutes. In any event, the bottom line is that if he removes the anovim on Yontif in order to be machshir adas, Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Tzadik holds it's possible. The Chachamim hichshiruha machshirim, they say it's kosher. And the Gemara is going to assume right now that there's no issue of tasa v'lo mina osui, but rather the issue is yesh dichri etzel mitzvahs or ein dichri etzel mitzvahs. But that hinges on a premise which is called lulav ein tzarech agad. So that's what the Gemara says. Savrua, right now, at this point, the Gemara is of the opinion, the Kuli Alm, everybody agrees, lulav ein tzarech agad, which is going to be a major machlokas coming around the bend in just a few minutes. That means, whether or not you hold like Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Tzadik, or Chacham, you don't need agad. So don't even raise the issue here of tasa v'lo mina osui, because there's no mitzvah to create the dalad minim by binding them together. And therefore, l'chora, the only issue that we can raise here, and maybe that's the root problem here, the controversy between Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Tzadik, and the Chachamim, is the issue of dichri etzel mitzvahs, which means that when we entered into Yontif, since there were more berries on the Hadas than leaves, it was possible. And then he wants the machshir, by removing the berries, a possible Hadas. And Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Tzadik, for one, holds he can't do that because yesh dichri etzel mitzvahs. Now keep in mind, Rabbi will say, no one denies the Mishnah. The Mishnah says that you can remove the berries. But when did the Mishnah record that you can remove the berries? Exactly, before Yontif. If it's before Yontif, then entering into Yontif, you have a kosher hadas, because there's more leaves than there are berries. But here the problem is that entering into Yontif, your hadas was possible. So again, Savrua Chachamim, Savrua, the Gemara holds that Kuli Amalo Pli, everybody agrees that Lulav Ein Tzarech Agad. So that clears the path of any issue with regard to Tasa V'lo Mina Osui. V'imtim Salomar, and even if you'll press the issue, and you'll tell me that Tzorech Eged, but nevertheless, Tzorech Eged is not really Tasa, because the Torah never says Tasa with regard to the Dalet Minim. With regard to Sukkah, the Torah says Tasa. And whenever the Torah says Tasa, it means you need an Asiyah, an active Asiyah. You can't just remove the Psul, and Mimela magically it becomes kosher. You have to actively create something that's kosher. And that's true in Sukkah where it says Tasa, but it's not true in the case of Lulav. Now, this be the case even if I hold that Lulav Tzarech Eged. Lulav Tzarech Eged is based on Gzeir Shav, we'll have in just a minute, to Agudas Ezov, because it says here in the Torah, Vilakach ulakachtem, and lakachtem means you have to take them all together, bound together as one. But the Torah never says to create the luluf, meaning to create the binding together. So at this point, the Gemara holds that there's no basis for applying the principle of tasa velomina asui in this case where he removed the berries on Yontif. And you may say, well, since in Sukkah the Torah says tasa and that excludes lomina asui, maybe we should derive the case of lulav from the case of Sukkah. That would be what's called a binyan av, right? We equate the analogy to the two. So Gemara says, lo yalfina lulav mi Sukkah. We will not derive the requirement of asiya in a binyan av from lulav, from Sukkah to lulav. In the case of Sukkah, d'ksiv beit tasa, the Torah says, tasa, you have to make the Sukkah. Is that the exclusion of alomina asui? However, in the case of lulav, the Torah doesn't use the word tasa, we're not going to assume that just like in Sukkah it says tasa, so too in lulav, by analogy, we require asiya with a psul of tasa velomina asui. And therefore, my laba hakamifli, by process of elimination, there's only one other issue that could be, that could lie at the heart of this controversy. Demand apostle according to Reb Elazar ben Shimon, Reb Elazar ben Tzadik, Savari holds, Amrinan, we apply the principle, which we know from Kachim, to mitzvot, and yesh dichriyetzel mitzvot. Therefore, when we entered into Yontif, and at this point the Hadas is possible, then it remains possible even if you remove the anovin, because of the principle of yesh dichri etzel mitzvah. So mind the machshir, and chacham who say no, there's no problem here, you can be machshir by removing the berries. Lo amrina yesh dichri etzel mitzvah. We hold that only as far as karbonos we apply the principle of yesh dichri etzel mitzvah, but not as far as mitzvahs are concerned. So in karbon, there's yesh dichri, but not in mitzvahs. Reb Elazar ben Tzadik holds, just like in karbon is yesh dichri etzel mitzvahs, so too in mitzvahs we apply the principle of yesh dichri etzel karbon, yesh dichri etzel mitzvah. That's the shita of Reb Elazar ben Tzadik. Okay. Now, I just want to point out to you a Rashi here. Dibra maskil dekuli alma. Okay, so let's take a minute to find this Rashi. If you count up from the bottom of the page, it's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 lines up from the bottom of the page. And here Rashi explains the shita of Reb Elazar ben Tzadik. Why does he hold that removing the berries will not be machshir the lulav? Says Rashi, the time and the reason demand, according to this opinion of Reb Elazar ben Tzadik, the apostle who says that the lulav remains posel, in this case, to be more precise about it, the hadas remains posel, is mishum tasa velomina asuhu. Okay. So you know what? This is a little bit ahead of us. Let's see if we can backtrack a bit. Uman de machshir sovar ein dichui le'inyan mitzvah, aval inyan kedusha kagon karbonos. That's where we apply the principle of yesh dichui etzel mitzvahs. So let's keep our finger on the next Rashi, which we started, but we started a little bit prematurely, and let's read just one more piece in the Gemara. The Gemara says, Don, you came in late. You want me to tell you where we're up to? If you have Lamed Gimel Lamed Aleph open?
Yes.
Okay. So if you're on Lamed Gimel Lamed Aleph, we're moving towards the end of the page, meaning in the second half of the daf, and we're up to the Ibois Ema. So if you'll see about 10 lines, maybe 12 lines up from the bottom of the Amud, you'll see a line that starts with Lulav.
I found it.
Great. So that's the Ibois Ema. So again, at this point, the Gemara thinks... just 1 second, Don. I apologize. I'm going to confuse you here. We're going a little bit up the daf. Yeah. My love for Hakam, if we demand for the Apostle Sovar, I'm reading Yesh Dich Eitzel. It's not the Bachshah Sovar, Lo, I'm reading Yesh Dich Eitzel Mitzvahs. Okay, so we're up to a line that starts with the word Lo.
Okay,
that's just like three lines, four lines above.
Kuli Alma?
Yeah. Lo, the Kuli Alma, the Gemara says, no, both Rabbi Elazar ben Tzaddik and the Rabbanan and Lo, I'm reading, they both agree that we don't apply the principle of Yesh Dich Eitzel Mitzvahs, as Rashi points out. That Yesh Dichu Yetzel Mitzvahs only applies to Kedusha and to Karbanos. So now we have to understand why then does Rabbi Elazar ben Tzaddik say that the Lulav is possible, the Hadas is possible when he removes the berries, if you're holding Lo Amrin on Yesh Dichu Yetzel Mitzvahs. Hachem B'melef Lulav Misukah Kamiflegi. We're going to go back to our original possibility that the Machlokas revolves around Taseh V'lo Min Asli, even though it doesn't say Asiya in the context of Lulav, but nevertheless we derive Asiya in Lulav from where? From Sukkah.
It doesn't say by Sukkah either. It says Sukkos Taseh L'cha. It doesn't say...
Yeah, I think the way Chazal read it is Sukkos Taseh L'cha. In other words, the word Chag comes to teach you something else. The Gemara derives from the word Chag that the Sukkah is also by not called Shiva. It has a din of Chag. But when it says Sukkos Taseh L'cha, it means that you have an Asiya on the Sukkah. I'm Dr. Rabbi Jacobitz. Not Jacobitz. What's his name?
Seth.
All right. But again, since we're not learning the sugya of Tassav Lominosli, so we don't have to get into that now. Okay, so what are we saying now? Kuli Alma, everybody agrees that Lo Amrin Yesh Dichu Eitzel Mitzvahs, but rather what's the machlokas here about? Where the lulav misukah kam miflegi. Marsav, according to Rabbi Elazar ben Tzaddik, Yalfina and Lulav Misukah. And if we derive Lulav Misukah, then the word Tasa applies even to what? Even to Lulav. And therefore we're going to have a problem of Tasa Velominosui when he removes the berries. Umar Sovar. But according to the Chachamim, Lo Yalfina and Lulav Misukah. We did not derive Lulav from Sukkah. They don't have this binyanav. And since there's no din of Asiya by Lulav, therefore there's no psul of Tase Velominosi. So now the Gemara is shifting. Originally, the Gemara wanted to suggest that there's no machlokas with regard to Tase Velominosi because everybody agrees either that Lulav ain't Tzarech Agad, or even if you push the agenda on Lulav Tzarech Agad, but we don't derive Lulav from Sukkah. Now, the whole machlokas revolves around dichui etzel mitzvahs or ein dichui etzel mitzvahs. Now the Gemara makes an about face. No, I can always insist that everybody agrees ein dichui etzel mitzvahs. Why does Rabbi Elazar ben Tzaddik insist that this is possible? Because he holds number one lulav tzarech agad, and number two, there's a requirement of asiya by lulav, and that requirement of asiya by lulav is derived from sukkah. And once you derive it, then there's a psul of tasa velo minos. All right, now we can get back to the Rashi that I mentioned before. So this is, again, in the Rashi, you have the wide lines on the bottom of the page. We're looking at the third of the wide lines. Lo, to kuli alma lo amrinon yesh dichui bin mitzvah. V'taymi demand apostle mishum tasa velo minos hu. Because sova lulav tzarech agad tzarech lemegad v'shayach be'asiya, there is some sort of action by which I create the lulav because I require agad. The hachan, what are they arguing about? The melef lulav misukah pligi. Do we derive lulav from sukkah? Is according to Rabbi Elazar ben Tzaddik yalfinon. Rashi says bebinyan av. Now it'd be interesting to know. According to Rashi, he says binyanav, how far is he willing to go with this? Usually a binyanav means I can universalize. There may be other mitzvahs which can be derived from sukkah. That would be interesting. In sittus, it says asiyah explicitly. But maybe in other cases, like tefillin, it doesn't say asiyah, it just says kshira. Maybe we could derive from binyanav. Well, what I mean to say is, if not for Rashi's mentioning a binyanav, I would have suggested it's some sort of a hekesh. Because the whole parasha tells you that number one, you have to sit in the sukkah, number two, you have to take the lulav. But Rashi's not learning midin hekesh, but rather midin binyanav. And if it's midin binyanav, you really want to know what are the rules and the scope of binyanav. When do you apply binyanav? When you do not apply binyanav? So let's see if Rashi will give us a clue here. Rashi says, "Bebinyanav hoil v'zeba asiyah or v'zeba asiyah." Ah, so Rashi says that a binyan av is only applicable when you have a certain, what we call a lowest common denominator. This, the two cases are really common. They both have an underlying premise that's shared by both of them, and that's asiyah, Rashi says, because again, even though it doesn't say the word asiyah in the Torah with regard to lulav, but nevertheless, the Torah does require asiyah because we're holding now that lulav tzarich aga. So once the Torah says that you require an asiyah lulav, I might as well derive this asiyah of lulav from a classical asiyah where the Torah explicitly spells out the word asiyah, and that's in the case of sukkah. Mazeh, just like in this case of sukkah, lo mina asui. You cannot just automatically make it into kosher. You have to actively set up something that's kosher. Avzeh here too, in the case of lulav, v'lo mina asui. And this leads us up to the e bayis ema.
What does it mean by not derived from the laws of sukkah? I mean, lulav has to do with sukkah. What else would it?
Right, but you know, the Torah went out of its way to say tasa in the case of sukkah. Actually, you should know the Gemara says in the Sefer Makis that if somebody's building a sukkah and he kills someone inadvertently while he's building the sukkah, that he's potter from malchus. I'm sorry, he's potter from golus. And why is that? Because of tasa, because the Torah requires an asiyah in sukkah. And the halacha is that if you're involved in a mitzvah act and you kill someone inadvertently, then you don't go into golus. In the classical case is a shliach bezdin. You know, he's hitting the guy 39 times and he loses count and he hits him a 40th time. The guy drops dead, chas v'shalom. So in such a case, believe it or not, the shliach bezdin is exonerated. He doesn't have to go into the mikvah. And the goal of dam is not allowed to touch him. Domim yeshlo. Because it's not dumi diyar and so forth and so on. So that's a famous sugya makis. And the Gemara applies that to the case of a shliach bezdin and also to the case of building a sukkah. Again, you have to see the Gemara inside. I don't want you to draw any conclusions based on what I'm saying here. But it seems from the Gemara that there is a mitzvah to build a sukkah. You know, if somebody was building a sukkah, you shouldn't laugh at him. You know, why didn't he just pay, the local, where I was brought up, there was Jimmy. I always remember Jimmy very fondly. You know, he was the custodian in our shul. He knew more halacha than most of the Jews in the shul. Anyway, so why not just ask Jimmy to build the sukkah? Again, in the case of the schach, it's more complicated. And Enoch Hinami, we need a Jew who's roy for the mitzvah of sukkah, is included in the mitzvah of sukkah to put the schach on. But then the question is, what about setting up the defanos? Is that also part of tasa?
So could a woman put on a schach?
I don't remember. I'd have to check that. Ask me afterwards and I'll look it up. That means probably a...
Can you explain what the binyan av is here?
Binyan av is like this. Whenever the Torah requires asiyah,
yes,
then we're going to use sukkah as the paradigm to
right.
Teach us tasav alomenos.
But what's going to do with lulav?
So lulav, if you hold lulav tzarich aga, it requires asiyah. Meaning you have to create the entity.
Oh, yeah, so this is all on the basis of that lulav requires aga.
Right. And that's what Rashi points out here when he says, "V'taima demand apostle." Let's see it again. Mishum tasav alomenasi dikasava. You want to underline those four words? Dikasava lulav tzarich lemegad. This is four lines up from the bottom. If you have the standard Gemara,
right. So that's the key.
Yeah, that's the key. You can't miss up on that,
right.
Because again, that's what I asked you before. Rashi postulates a binyan av here. What does that mean, a binyan av? Am I going to take sukkah and now extrapolate it universally to every single mitzvah? Every mitzvah requires tasav alomenos. Rashi says, name. It's only if you have another mitzvah which has a lowest common denominator. And what's the lowest common denominator? An asiyah, that you're creating the mitzvah. And just like in the case of sukkah, you create the sukkah, so too in the case of lulav, you create the lulav. By agat, if you hold lulav tzarech,
that's only Rabbi Yehuda.
And Rabbi Elazar ben Tzaddik accepts the sheet of Rabbi Yehuda. Okay. Now, there's an earlier Rashi before the lines get wide. Dibur Maskev Lulav Misukah Lo Yolf. So let me see by a show of hands if everybody can find that Rashi. It's just a little bit above on the page.
Right.
You have it? Everybody have it? The lulav misuka lo yolif. So again, at this point in the Gemara, just to remind ourselves, we're holding now that the machlokis between Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Tzadik, and the Rabbana revolves around the issue of yesh dichei etzel mitzvahs or ein dichei etzel mitzvahs, because there's no tasev lo menasui based on the principle of lulav misuka lo yalf or lo yalfinam. We don't derive lulav from sukkah. Hilchos Rashi says, therefore, mehashta, now that we've set up this premise that there's no requirement of asiya in lulav, leka lemifsale, there's no other possible explanation for Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Tzadik to disqualify el mishum dichui, because at one point going into yontif, it was possible because of the niktam rosho situation, the head was cut off. Oh, but here Rashi adds something. The kevan sha'agdo bipsul. Now wait a second. Kevon sha'agdo bipsul. Rashi seems to be assuming now what? When he says agdo. The lulav tzarech agad, right? That's a little bit strange, because if you remember, the Gemara vacillates back and forth as to whether or not we should commit Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Tzadik in the first understanding to the position of lulav tzarech agad, or maybe he can hold lulav ein tzarech agad. Rashi now presents the thesis that lulav tzarech agad, and that's why we have a problem of dichui. The problem of dichui, says Rashi, stands on the shoulders of lulav tzarech agad, which means the following: that dichui only applies the moment that the chefta shel mitzvah becomes royal mitzvaso, and if there's a psul, then we apply dichui. That's what we said, that if you take off the berries before yontif, it's not a chefta royal mitzvah. There's no mitzvah because there's no yontif. It's just a botanical growth, nothing more. But Rashi seems to say, at what critical point do we say the shem mitzvah, the chefta shel mitzvah is chal? It's at the point of agad, and that's when you have a niktam rosho situation, because the tamra only came the next morning. So Rashi uses very fancy and abstract language here. You can underline this. He says, v'nikra alav, we can call this lulav. Alav means on the lulav, has a shame, a name, lulav shel mitzvah. And Rashi says, what's the difference between the lulav erev yontif and the lulav on yontif? On erev yontif it's called a lulav, but on yontif it becomes a lulav shel mitzvah. And that's a definite identity change. And now when you have a lulav shel mitzvah, guess what? Because the hadas was nikam rosho, it's dachui. Bishas dichui, at the point of the emergence of the shame lulav shel mitzvah, it was dachui, is therefore nidche liolam, according to Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon, Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Tzadik, he holds that yesh dichui eitzel mitzvahs liolam. The afal gav delo nire v'nitche. Okay, so now Rashi asks another question. Usually, when we say yesh dichui etzel mitzvahs, what it means is that initially it was kosher, and then it became pasul. But here, this case is that from the inception of the lulav, the shem lulav shel mitzvah, when he did the agad, at that moment it was already pasul, it was already nidcha. That's not called dichui etzel mitzvahs. Rashi is postulating that dichui etzel mitzvahs means we have A, B, and C. A, it was kosher; B, it became pasul; and C, it became ki'ilu kosher again. And since at point B it became pasul, it was rejected liolam. But here in our case, it never had A, it never had a status of being kosher. Radarashi says, El dichui me'ikara. Me'ikara means from the get-go. And it says, from the inception of the shame lulav shel mitzvah, it was already dachui. So you could always argue it never became a lulav shel mitzvah. And if it never became a lulav shel mitzvah, there's no dichui. Dichui only applies when you have a chefta shel mitzvah, and then it gets rejected. But here it was never a chefta shel mitzvah at all. So Rashi says, "Hai denaka plugtayu b'miyatan b'yontif." So Rashi says that even though, again, this might be a case of dichui meikara, the Rashi sort of, in a sense, pushing us off, and he's saying we'll have to come back to this later on. And Rashi says that the machlokas revolves around a case of miyatan b'yontif. Correct? That's the opening line in this price that we've been studying, of arvalikton, meaning on yontif, mishum destama, basar di agdehu. he says, if we assume that this whole story where the lulav grew a tmara took place on Yontif itself, why do we assume it took place on Yontif? Because since it's a case of Agdei, again, keep in mind that Rashi is learning now that Lulav Tzarech Agad. Now, when do you do the Agad? In a classical case. Again, not in a case where you violated the law, but if you... on Erev Chag, Erev Yontif. He says, Mishum de Stoma. Stoma means, in general, we could assume the Basar, the Agdei Hu, the Habi Yontif, Lo Agadle. That it must be that we're talking where he does what he does to be Machshir the Hadas on Yontif itself after the Agad took place. And the Agad took place on Yontif itself. But now Rashi asks himself the following question. The Gemara already presented the possibility that Lulav ain't Tzarech Agad. So how do we work out this sugya of Yesh Dichli Eitzel Mitzvus according to Reb Lazar Reb Tzadik if you hold Lulav ain't Tzarech Agad? Says Rashi, "Ve'i lo tzarich agad, itzrich leminka beyontif." We'll have to say that that's why the Braisa assumes that he removed the berries on Yontif. Mishum di lav the kidesh hayom, if it didn't happen on Yontif, but rather before Yontif. Akati lo chayla leizman mitzvah. We haven't yet gotten to the emergence of the time of the mitzvah. V'lo shem mitzvah. And therefore, there's no lulav shel mitzvah lemikre dichui to apply the principle of dichui. So Rashi says the following: basically, we must assume that he plucked the berries on Yontif itself, and that for one of two reasons: either because we're holding lulav tzarech agad, and if lulav tzarech agad, the agad took place mistoma on erev Yontif. So it was already in a state of Agad going into Yontif. Or alternatively, if we hold Lulav Ein Tzarech Agad, then he has to emphasize that this took place on Yontif, because otherwise there would be no Dichui. There's no Dichui on Erev Yontif. Dichui could only be after the Zman HaMitzvah, when the Shem Lulav Shel Mitzvah emerges.
So he's done two of those. He's done the Agad and Yontif, and he's removed the Erev Yontif.
Well, whether or not Agad is also on Yontif is going to depend upon a sugya later. But you're right. If you're lulav tzarech Agad, then you need what's called a kesher shel kayama. And then, in addition to the violation of melecha es makom apatis, she has another violation of melecha es kosher.
So why is Rashi discussing all these examples where you
again, we want to know what's the status of Sadas if he removes the berries on Yontif. Comes along from Lozberg Tzadik and he says, you know what, you have a problem of Dichi Eitzel Mitzvahs. Why? Because going into Yontif, it had already Agad, and if it had Agad, it was already a shame Lulav Shel Mitzvah, and at that moment in time, it became Dachui. Why? Because at that moment in time, he had too many berries. So therefore, we apply the principle of Dichui. The Gemara then suggests that even if Lulav ain't Tzarech Agad, I could apply the principle of Dichui, but that's not based on the Agad, but based on Yontif itself. Rashi says, Midiki Shayom, once we enter into Yontif, it becomes a Lulav Shel Mitzvah, and you don't need Agad, according to this Ma'an D'Omer, and now we have Dichui because there are too many berries. Now, all of this presumes that the machlokas between Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Tzadik, and the Chachamim revolves around Dichui Eitzel Mitzvahs. We could, as the Gemara suggested now, say the machlokas has to do with whether Yalfina and Lulav Misukah. And that means the machlokas revolves around Tasa Velo Minasu. If we derive the principle of Asiya from Sukkah to Lulav, then Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Tzadik has another problem over here, that once he does the Agad and the Lulav is possible, the Adasim Apsulim, then when he removes the berries, he hasn't done an Asiya. So at this point, the Gemara wants to suggest that maybe Kuliyamalo Pligi, even Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Tzadik would agree that ain't Dichui Eitzel Mitzvahs. The problem here with the Psul is a different one, and that's called Tasim Alomina Asu, if you derive Lulav from Sukkah.
You need a flowchart.
Yeah, okay, maybe we should create one. So the Gemara says, Ibais Ema, another possibility is Isviralan Lulav Tzarech Agad. It could be that if you hold lulav tzarech agad, which might be the shita of Rabbi Elazar Reb Tzadik, so there is an asiya on lulav, is then kuli alma, everybody would agree under that premise that yalfinan lulav misukkah. There's no reason why we shouldn't derive one asiya from another asiya through a binyanav. And that's going to be the shita of Rabbi Elazar Reb Shimon. V'hacha, but here, the lulav tzarech agad kamiflegi. They're arguing as to whether or not the Torah requires agad. And therefore, since Rabbi Elazar Reb Tzadik requires agad, therefore there's an asiya, you create the lulav. And if you actively create the lulav, then we can use a binyan av to derive lulav from sukkah and apply the psul of tasev al-omenasui when he removes the berries. Chachamim, on the other hand, never had this halacha of lulav tzarech eged. They never required eged. And therefore, according to the Chachamim, there's no psul, obviously, of tasev lo menasui. And kuliyavolo pligi, at this point, everybody agrees that ain't dichu yetzel mitzvahs. So therefore, the Chachamim say you can simply remove the berries and it'll be kosher. Now, are you allowed to remove the berries? We said not. But we're going to soon see the Gemara that there may be a situation where you're allowed to remove the berries. But in any event, the Gemara says, "Beplugta uplugta ubeplugta dehani tanoi." And here's where we're going to quote Rabbi Yehuda. He's the original machadesh that holds that lulav tzarech eged. The sanya we learned in the Brisa, lulav bein agud bein she'eno agud kosher. According to Chachamim, the lulav is okay even without eged. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Rabbi Yehuda disagrees, agud kosher, sheino agud pasul. Only if the lulav is agud, only then is it kosher. My time with Rabbi Yehuda, why does Rabbi Yehuda, what's the basis, the source for requiring eged? Yolif, he has a gzer shava called lakicha, kicha, miagudas ezo. So in the parasha of Tumas, Kalim, and Adam Lames, if Kalim came in contact with a dead body, or a human being came in contact with a dead body, so the Torah requires hazah mimei efer paraduma. So the paraduma is burnt, and the efer, the ashes, are used with a concoction to make what's called mei hazah, mei efer, and that has to be sprinkled on the tummy. Now the hazah, the tummy, has to be done with agudas ezov. So what they did was they took agudas ezov, which again I'm not going to pronounce this word properly, but it's called a hyssop. Okay, H-Y-S-S-U-P-O-P, a hyssop. It's very low bush. It's common all over the place. I think if you eat something called za'atar, then it probably comes from this plant, which is sort of like a desert bush, a brush, I guess you'd call it. And that's called ezov. And then what they did was they took the ezov and they dipped it into the mechatas, and then they sprinkled it on the tamid, whether it be adam or kelim. So the Torah there in the parasha of agudas ezov uses the same verb that it uses here with regard to lulav. That's called lakicha, lakicha meagudas ezov. Ksiv hacha here in lulav it says lukatem lachem by yom arishon. Uksiv hasam there in the case of agudas ezov it says lukatem agudas ezov malahalin baguda. The Torah itself explicitly says that the ezov has to be baguda because the ezov is made of different shoots of different stems, and we have to tie them all together and bind them. Is afkan here too, because of the gzeirah shav of lakicha, is baguda, you need to tie together the lulav with the other minim. Rabbanon lesle lakicha lakicha. Now this is based on the principle called ein adam don gzeirah shav liatzmo. Gzeirah shav has to come through an oral transmission from Rebbe to Rebbe all the way back to Moshe Rabbeinu. And Rabbanon never had this gzeirah shav. It's very interesting. This is on the side. Tosfos in Masechta Shabbos says that there's not only a transmission on the gzeirah, the specific gzeirah Shabbos, there's also a transmission on the number of gzeirah Shabbos. And if let's say one mandiyama rejects the gzeirah Shabbos, another mandiyama, he has to fill in something else in its place because the magic number. I don't remember what the number is. Maybe 23. I don't remember. But in any event, the Chachamim,
each person is only allowed that amount, maximum amount.
And not only is it a maximum amount, but it's also a minimum amount. Meaning that if he, exactly. If like the Chachamim for exact amount, meaning if the Chachamim reject l'kicha k'icha, they have to come up with something else. It's like tariq mitzvah.
It's not each person. It's the whole.
Okay, I'm sorry I mentioned this. I just on the side. Yeah, just so again, Rabbi Olson, let's just get back to our sugya for now. So I want to not lose the focal point. So what we're concentrating on is the following: what is the machlokes between Rabbi Elazar Reb Tzadik and the Chacham? So the Gemara goes through three stages. Stage number one is that they have no machlokas about Tasav Olamanasi. That sugya is completely irrelevant. And the reason why it's irrelevant is because of A or B, either because Lulav Ein Tzarech Agad, or even if Lulav Tzarech Agad, but we don't have a hekesh to derive Asiya from Sukkah. And therefore, at this point, the Gemara thinks that the source and the root of the machlokas is about Yesh dichuyetzu mitzvus or ein dichuyetzu mitzvus. That was phase number one. Now we get to phase number two in the sugya. Everybody agrees that yesh, that ein dichuyetzu mitzvus. The machlokas here is whether or not we derive lulav from sukkah. And everybody is in agreement now that lulav tzarech agad. But even though lulav tzarech agad, the rabbanon still insists that we don't derive lulav from sukkah as far as tasav l'manasui, and now the machlokas is about tasav l'manasui, and that leads us to phase number three, which is very similar to phase number two, except that now the Gemara makes a turnabout and says the machlokas is not about tasav l'manasui. Everybody would agree that if lulav tzarech eged, then we would apply the psul of tasav l'manasui, but the machlokas is about whether or not we require eged. So the first understanding is machlokas is about yesh dichuyetzu mitzvus or ein dichuyetzu mitzvus. The second interpretation is the machlokas revolves around whether or not tasav l'manasi applies to lulav. And the third understanding of the Gemara is the machlokas is about lulav tzarech eged. Do we have a gzeirah shava yilkicha l'kicha, or do we not have a gzeirah shava? Now the Gemara wants to clarify the authorship of a braisa. Man Tana, who is the author leha of the following braisa, the Tana Rabbana, we learned in a braisa, lulav mitzvah liogdo, but v'imlo agado kosher. So the Gemara postulates that this braisa is very problematic. We would say mimonafshach, no matter how you slice the cake, you're in trouble. E Rabbi Yehuda has exeris shava from agudas ezel to agad and lulav is kilo agada my kosher. Why does the braisa say that igud agad is not critical that you could do without it? And the evid, if you took the lulav and the adasim and the arava separately, one after the other, without agad, or maybe you took them all together without agad, that you yotze the mitzvah, the irabana, but if it's rabana, they don't have the gzeres shava, and they don't require agad at all, is my mitzvah ka'avit. Why is the Gemara says lulav mitzvah liogdo? That doesn't make sense. So again, this pshara, this middle ground here, which says that yes, there's a mitzvah to do agad, but no, it's not likuva and you can survive without it, doesn't seem to fit into any pattern whatsoever. According to the Chachamim, we don't require agad, so why are you telling me there's a mitzvah of agad? According to the shita of Rabbi Yehuda, then agad is absolutely critically a requirement. We olam rabbanon. The authorship of this price should be attributed to the Chachamim. Ah, you'll ask me a question. Why does it say mitzvah yogdo? Mitzvah mishum ze keli v'anveil. That this beautifies the mitzvah. Now I'm not sure what that means when it says it beautifies the mitzvah. Is this aesthetic beauty? So I have a footnote here in the name of Sefer HaParadeis. That's, you know, in a Lomdisha world, Sefer HaParadeis is a little bit half here and half there, because they attribute Sefer HaParadeis to none other than Rashi, but, you know, if Rashi doesn't give this shtickl Torah here in his Pirush on the Shas, you wonder why. But anyway, in the Sefer HaParadeis he writes that the requirement of Agad as Zekeli Me'aveu is simply to guarantee that the Olei Alulav Shalo Yispazru, they shouldn't get separated from the Shidra. You remember we had a Mishnah at the beginning of the Perek that says that Nifridu Olav is a problem, and you know, we don't want the olive to separate from the lulav. So how do you prevent that from happening? I don't know if you've ever noticed it, but almost in every lulav, the you know, with, as the days go by, you know, the olive starts separating from the shidra. So that's the idea of agad. This is a whole different type of zeh kelim yaveu. Classically, zeh kelim yaveu is to physically, aesthetically beautify the object. A talisna, tefillino, sefer Torah, that's a physical beauty. But here, we're talking about a different kind of zeh kelim yaveu. It's a halachic zeh kelim yaveu, in the sense that we want to guarantee that your lulav should be a kosher lulav, and you shouldn't get any psul, you shouldn't have any problems with the lulav. So you bind the lulav in such a way that it guarantees that you'll avoid this psul. So I have a number of kashas on this Sefer HaParadis. First of all, the agat that the Gemara is talking about is to attach what? The aravos, the hadasim and the aravos to the lulav. Now if you're worried about nisparadu ha'olim, so I don't understand exactly what the problem is. Why not just have rings on your lulav? Apparently it's both. Apparently he's worried about the olim falling off from the hadasim and the aravos. I'm just not sure, just logistically, how he avoids that problem by agad. Unless the agad is, you see, but it's aliyah v'keitzba, because it's both good and bad news. If the agad climbs up the, you know, let's see, the majority of the arava or the hadas or both, then you always have a problem that underneath the agad it might be that the leaves are separated. But in any event, they apparently had a method, according to the Sefer HaParadis, of agad that would protect the, prevent the pizur ha'olim for all three minim, both the lulav and the hadasim and the aravos.
I'd like to know what it is for the aravos.
Say it again one more time.
I'd like to know what that was for the aravos. It would be very kind of handy.
Well, again, you know, let's say the kaishaluch. As I say, I'm not recommending kaishaluch because I've seen so many problems. But the kaishaluch that, you know, the children will sell to you on the street for 5 shekel. They take lulav. Olive leaves,
yeah.
And they weave it together. That's called, I don't know what language that is. It might be Yiddish. I don't know. Maybe it's Polish. That's called kaishaluch. So now, what you do is, again, please, Michael, I'm not recommending this. Well, Tuesday, so we'll ask the expert. We'll see if he agrees with me. I happen to be very nervous about the kaishaluch, because what happens is that the kaishaluch very often have a narrow opening, and when you stuff the hadas and the aravos in, the leaves come off.
Yeah, yeah.
So here what you're really trying to accomplish, as a Sefer HaParadis, is to try to protect the leaves from coming off. And if so, and pumfaker, what you're going to do is...
Yes, yes.
So I don't know. But again, in theory, if you could figure out a way of getting your aravos and your hadas inside, deep inside the kaishaluch, but they're wide lens kaishaluch, in such a way that it won't remove the leaves, then it could be, it might even protect the leaves, because now it surrounds the leaves and it's almost like binding them together. I don't know. I'm just pointing out to you this footnote that caught my attention, because I actually thought that lulav tzarech agad as a zeh kelim yaveu is an aesthetic kind of thing. In other words, it creates a certain balance. You know, if I have on the front cover of the book that I have, which is in the Beis Medrash, it has a picture of a lulav with a perfect lulav with agad, and it does have a certain aesthetic appeal. I don't know, whatever it is. So again, if you're on the aesthetic appeal, then that's it. Can give you. If you don't like that shot, then you have the Sefer HaParadis, so that's going to prevent the psul of nispazru ha'olim.
If I'm not mistaken, there's a machloket of Zechariah Ben who says there should be Hidro for all mitzvot. And
what you mean to say that there's some shita that says that we don't apply Zechariah Ben Veyu for all mitzvot? Is that what you're saying?
If I understand correctly. But let's say that it...
I never heard such a thing. I think Zechariah Ben Veyu applies to every single mitzvah.
So if that's the case, why creates Hadar? That would seem repetitive. Redemption.
Well, no, the Hadar has to do with the kashrus of the Esrog. It's got to be a pre-Eitz Hadar. Now, in all the cases like Yovish, let's take that case where a lulav Yovish, let's say an Esrog, you're talking about an Esrog Yovish is possible. That has nothing to do with the absence of Zekeh Lumianveh. And there's a Rashi at the beginning of the parak that throws us for a loop, because Rashi says the lulav Yovish is possible because of Zekeh Lumianveh. And Tosis right away pounces upon him and says, wait a minute, Zekeh Lumianveh is a nice embellishment, it's a cherry on top, but it's not critical to the mitzvah. So how could Rashi say the lulav Yovish is possible because of Zekeh Lumianveh? So if you have an Esrog Yovish, even though the Torah says priates Hadar, if you're talking about Zekeh Lumianveh, that would not undermine the kashrus of the Esrog. But if you're talking about the absence of Hadar, and we might apply that to Niktam Rosho, you might apply it to Nifritu. Right, to Nifritu. If you say that Nifritu, Rashi says, is a psul of Hadar, then that means that it's not just the absence of Zekeh Lumianveh, it's much more fundamental, much more critical. So again, this brisa is attributed to the Chachamim, which means l'chatchila we're going to require Agad because of Zekeh Lumianveh. But the Eved, if let's say you didn't do the Agad, you're Yotze the Mitzvah, because they don't have the Gzeres Shavah between what? Agudas Ezov and Agudas Lulav. Now we go back to the Mishnah. Osha hayu adnov of merubim. The Mishnah says that if there are more berries than leaves on the hadas, it's possible. Amar Rav Chisda, Dover Zeh, what I'm about to share with you, Rabbeinu Hagadol Amoro. Now this is very interesting. You know, in the first generation Amoraim, there's only one Amora, to the best of my knowledge, that's called Rabbeinu Hagadol. Usually Rabbeinu Hagadol is singularly reserved for who? From Yudah Nasi, he was a Tana. But here we're talking about Rav. Rav is the first generation Amora. I mean, the Gemara says unbelievable things about Rav all over the place. He was in a whole different madrig, mamish.
Rav Abara Gavra.
Yeah, in fact, there is, according to Yishalmi, an opinion that says that Rav has the status of a Tana. And Rav was a Talmud of Rabbeinu HaKadosh. He was actually a Talmud of Rav Chiya, his uncle, who in turn was a Talmud of Rabbeinu HaKadosh. And Rav Chiya was a Tana. And he was such a close disciple of his uncle, Rav Chiya. He used to call him Chabibi. Now, people think Chabibi is a modern Israeli invention that goes back to the Gemara itself. And he was very close to Rav Chiya. But he's called by Rav Chisda, who's the next generation of Amoraim. He's called, Rav is called Rabbeinu HaGadol. V'amokom yiyah be'ezro. Now this is like a Sephardic tradition almost. You know, amongst Sephardim, as soon as they mention the name of one of the giants, they add a bracha to his name. You can't enunciate the name of someone with who's such a gadol without wishing him well. So that's what Rav Chisda says. Rabbeinu HaGadol told me this, and Hashem yiyah be'ezro. Amokom, God should be at his aid. Okay. But then, now let's get to the sentence itself. So what did Rav say? Lo shanu, when do we say that the hadas is possible? Ela b'makom echad, that there's a concentration of berries at one point of the hadas. That's something that upsets the balance or the tsura, the way we see the shape of the hadas. You know, it's a myriad of anovim in one specific place. Avo, but let's say these berries are spread out throughout the hadas. Bishnayim or bishloshim makomo. So there's no single located concentration point. Is then kosher. That's considered a kosher hadas. Now here we have a footnote in which he says the following, and he's quoting one of the achronim. He says that in Yeshbo Anovim b'makom echad Yesh lifsol, and the reason for the psul, if there's a concentration of berries, in one place, is because the Torah calls the hadas anaf. What does it say there? Anaf eitz avos, correct? Yeah. Oh. Now the word eitz in the Torah is used in contrast to another word which is called pri. For example, the esrog is called pri eitz hadar. So if you're talking about whether the fact it's a pre is positive or negative, in the case of Esrog, it's positive, it's critical. But in the case of Hadassim, the Torah doesn't call Hadassah pre. The Torah went out of its way to call it an eitz. Eitz is the opposite of a pre. And now what are you looking at? You're looking at a whole cluster of peros, of anovim, of berries. And basically what you're looking, what you see with your eyes is a branch or a stem that's holding on to peros. That would not be described as eitz. Again, obviously there's a stem that is eitz that's holding on to these peros, but there's such a cluster of peros here. You know, I'm reminded of the picture that, of the Meraglim, you know, when they're carrying the grapes from Israel. You know what I'm talking about, right? So there's a cluster of grapes. You know, you have. Let's say you would take a cluster of grapes together with its stem. You know, you see such a concentration of a massive amount of grapes, of fruits in front of you, that the stem almost loses its status. The stem is just something that you're using to hold the grapes, the fruits. And therefore, this is not called Eitz Avos. However, if it's in Shnayim U'Shloshim Mekomos, then what we see in between each section of berries is we see the Eitz itself. So we really notice the Eitz. The Eitz becomes much more prominent. And in that sense, the berries or the fruits become secondary, and therefore there's no psul of peros here. So again, what we're suggesting here is that the Gemara thinks that if there's a concentration of peros of anovim in one particular place, then there's a psul here called anatz. Eitz avos, eitz velo pri. Eitz to the exclusion of a pri. But if the peros are spread out throughout, and in between the peros you're looking at leaves that are on the hadas, then you could call it anatz anaf eitz avos. Now all this Rabosa is the Hava, meaning the Gemara is about to reject it. So let's not get too comfortable with this Gemara. Amalei Rava. Now we're turning to Daf Lamed Gimel Amid Beis. So Rava turns to Rav Chisda. He's not very happy. He says Shnayim U'Shloshim Mekomos. If there are berries in two or three places, for sure the Esrog, the Hadas, excuse me, is possible. Why? Havi, it's considered Minumar. Now the word Minumar is a word which we'll translate in just a minute literally, but it's a word that has halachic significance in many, many different areas of halacha. The Gemara here, Rava here, is using the word menumar and applying it here to one particular context. But the word menumar applies in many different contexts. So what is menumar? Menumar means spotted. It's like the back of what's it called, a leopard? Or the leopard, I got that right? A leopard. Which I think in Hebrew is called lavi, if I'm not mistaken.
Namer.
Namer. Okay. And lavi doesn't have any spots. Only a leopard has spots. Okay. That's good. Good to know. Next time I'm on a safari, I'll keep this in mind. All right. So namer is minumar, right? It's the only animal, I guess, that's spotted. We used to read a children's book to our children about yeah, is that what it's called? Lost its spots. Yeah, it used to magically lose its spots and then get its spots back. It's what a cute book that we used to read. So Rava thinks that the problem is exacerbated in the case where the berries are spread out throughout the hadas, because that becomes menumar. In other words, the tzura, when you look at this at this hadas, what you're seeing is a hadas that's spotted, that's speckled with these berries, with these round berries, and that's possible. Therefore, we have to rewrite the text of Rav Chisda, the name of Rav, Ela'i Itmar. If Rav Chisda had a tradition in the name of Rav, Hochi Itmar, here's what the accurate version or transmission should be. Oshayu anovim meruba miolav posel. The Mishnah says that there are too many berries. It's posel. Amar Rav Chisda dover zerabenu amro va'makom yieh be Ezro lo shanu ela anovav shchoros aval anovav yerukos mine hadasu and amar Rav Papa. I'm sorry, the kosher. Okay. So this is a whole new tradition in the name of Rav, and that is that the whole problem, the entire issue about berries, is only when they become black. I guess the berries sometimes dry up, and instead of being green, they become black. And once they become black, then the mara, the way, the appearance of the hadas is such that it it's not called hadar. It's not something beautiful. So let's read it again. Lo shanu, when do we say that the anovav, since there's such a multiplicity of anovav, is it passes the hadas ella anovav shchoros, that they began to get dry and they turned black. Aval anovav yerukos, if the berries are still green, is mini da hadas, we don't see them as berries, but rather they're sort of camouflaged in hadas, you know, the green berries and the green hadas, and it becomes like one entity. And the anovim really have the same appearance, at least in color, as the leaves themselves. And that's not called menumar. That's not called spotted, because something is spotted, it means you have a consciousness of two different colors. And if it's not menumar, then it's kosher. Now, what's not clear to me in this sugya, and this requires a lot more research, is what happens in the case of anovim shchoros, which we're saying now is posel. In the case of yerukos, we're saying it's kosher. So I have a feeling that, let me just suggest one possibility, I'm not sure if what I'm telling you is right, that in the case of yerukos, since it's called mini hadas, and the Gemara says therefore it's kosher, it means it's kosher even if there's a multitude of anovim yerukos. What I'm suggesting is the following, that the Gemara is making a paradigm shift here as far as the psul of anovim in hadas. There is no psul of anovim hadas until the anovim turn what?
Black.
Turn black. As long as they're green, there is no psul at all. And we're going to have to research this and see if this is right. I just want to get to one more line here and then we'll finish up. Amar Rav Papa, Rav Papa says, but if they're black, it's posel. And the black anovim, when they're spread out throughout the hadas, makes it look like menumar, it's spotted. And that's because of the contrast of the black with the green. Again, we now have to ask the question, what if there's a concentration of black anovim in one particular spot, and if it's not menumar? So that might be the case in which the Mishnah says that if it's merubin. See, I don't know, now how do we interpret the Mishnah? The Mishnah says, if hayu anovim merubim, so according to my thesis, we're definitely talking about black anovim, and the Mishnah says merubim. So what does it mean? Only if it's spread out throughout the hadas, then it's menumar. Or does it mean? See, where does menumar come in? That's what I don't understand. I'm claiming that if it's yerukos, then there is no psul at all, because it's, the Gemara calls it mini hadas. So the only psul of anovav is going to be shchoros, and now the Gemara is invoking the principle of menumar. So that means that shchoros is a psul only if it's spread out throughout the hadas. So it comes out now, if we're reading the Gemara correctly, that if you would have a concentration of black, dried up berries in one particular place in the hadas, even if there are many, many berries of that sort, it would still be kosher. But the problem of shchoros is that the contrast between black and green makes it into menumar, and that would only apply if it's spread out throughout the hadas. Amar Papa, with this we'll conclude, adumos ki shchoros damya. What happens if the berries are red? And Rav Pop insists that red berries have the same status as blackberries, and therefore they're psul. So it's only green berries, which are camouflaged in the same color as the ole hadas, then there's no psul. But if they turn a different color in contrast, whether it's black or even red, red is considered like black. The Omer Rav Chanina, and I'll prove it to you, says Rav Papa, Hai dam shachar adomu el shalaka. We have a principle that in blood, if you see black blood, you know that it's really red blood. But laka means it became black with the passage of time. Mitch, what would that be called in English? Idenized or something? No. When red, when black turns, when
red blood turns black.
Red blood turns black. Is there a word for that? There must be a word for that in science. Yeah, I don't know, whatever that word is. I mean, you've all seen it, right? That, you know, if you have a cut after I don't know how many hours or days, it'll turn black. Now it's very interesting because the Gemara is talking about Dam Nida, which is metamid when it's red, and what we're saying is that even though now it's black and it's not red, she's still Tmea because we know that it's red. So you're starting with red and you're ending up with black. In the case of the berries on the Hadas, it's just the reverse. You started with green and then it became black. Just one second, let me just think this in. Red became black. Oh, he's saying that it went from green to red and red to black?
No, from green to red, but the red is the same as the black.
Right, but I thought it was just the... Let me just...
In terms of the... If you're looking at it when they're green, they look the same as the leaves, right?
Yeah.
So if they turn red, because they mature and they go from green to red, red's their natural color. If they're a predominance of that color, then it's the same as if it was black. Hmm.
But it's very interesting because in neither we want to get red, and the finish is that black is like red. So we're equating black with red. In the case of Hadassim, we in order to passel Hadass, which is according to our Pop can apply even if the berries are red, we're starting with black. You know, it's the real psul of berries is black. Comes along with our Pop and he says that red also has the same status as black. In neither we're saying the opposite. We're saying that black has the same status as red. You know, it's, what's your paradigm? Your paradigm is, in the case of a psul of Anovman and Hadas, is black. In the case of Dam Nida, it's red. In the equation of Shachar Shachar Ka'adam means that we're now expanding red in the case of Nida to include black, and black is considered like red. In the case of the psul of Hadas, it was saying just the opposite. The real psul is black. What we're saying now is that black can be expanded to include red.
Because
it's a little bit of a...
But in both cases, the same red and black are the same in terms of...
No, I agree with you. That's what the Gemara says. I'm just saying, you know, if you had a proof that red equals black, if you follow me. You start with black, and red is the same as black, then I would accept it. But in the case of neither, that's not the paradigm. There, the paradigm is black is the same as red. So how do I know that red is the same as black? You're saying they're both the same.
Why not?
Okay, again, because...
A equals B.
We're talking about changings of colors, right? So you might say
no,
that...
No, black
never goes into red.
No, Dam Nida. What are we saying?
It doesn't go from green to black to red.
No. Let's start with Dam Nida. What are we saying about Dam Nida? It definitely is red.
It starts as red.
So now the finish is that the red turns into black.
Right. Okay.
Does that mean that red and black are the same color? Not at all.
No, it's just telling you
that red turns into black. Now, how do you know the black turns into red?
No, it doesn't.
So I don't know why you have any basis from Nida. What can you prove from Nida? I'm the adversary here. I'm fighting the opposite position. So I'm going to present the opposite position. The sharp contrast between black and green is called menumar.
Okay.
Now maybe red is a contrast. Maybe it's not a contrast. I don't know. But don't prove anything from neither, because in neither all we're saying is that the red blood turns black. That doesn't mean that the two colors are interchangeable. That doesn't mean that if you're trying to create a contrast in color, red sets up the same contrast as black. That I don't know.
Okay,
you understand? I'm just fighting the Gemara at this point. You know. All right, Rabbi Osai, I went a little overtime. I apologize. So, B'li Neder, tomorrow we'll start. Let's make a note of it with a Miatan Kosher, correct?
Yeah.
Is that what we're up to?
When the blood turns black, it's called oxidation.
Oh, excellent. Oxidation.
Excellent.
Oxidation. So who would believe that oxidation is going to tell me something about a hadas? Whether it's manure or not. I don't know. You know, that's a bit of a stretch.
Okay. I got an